So, welcome back to From Fever Pitch to Hurler on the Ditch on for this month's edition in, on Scariff Bay Community Radio. So this is a very interesting month, obviously, a very interesting weekend. One colossal fixture, but in what's turning out to be a titanic title race for the Premier League. So I'll just introduce my co-hosts. So Ross.
Hey, Ross Martin here. Thanks a million, Tim. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Back again. Great to be back. James, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Lovely to be back again.
Thanks a million, James. And Terry, how are they all in North London?
They're good. It's great to hear the Irish accents again, lads, although I've got a resident Irish lady here anyway. But
she's usually shouting at you, though, Terry.
She's fine. I was out playing tennis today, and it was a little bit what the Irish call Baltic. Even the Irish people were starting to complain that they were part of the tennis club.
Okay, lads, so welcome. So we'll jump straight in. One little thing. I had to write an abstract to this show before we do goes out every month, and this time I phrased it as three of the biggest teams in world football are going for the Premier League race. Was I incorrect, lads? The first fixture up is West Ham and Liverpool. Is Liverpool's title race over us?
Yeah, I think it is now at this stage. Look, mathematically, they're still thereabouts. I think Man City, Arsenal form has been quite good over the last number of weeks. Like, it's gone to the stage where Liverpool, they've been very shaky. So, yeah, I think actually even West Ham are similar enough in the fact that they've been a little bit shaky over the last number of weeks. Their season, similar to Liverpool, is on the brink of petering out too a little bit. So, yeah, I reckon I can see this one being a draw. I think Liverpool, from a championship point of view, I think it's done. I think even some of their players look a bit tired. I think even the whole Klopp long farewell or last dance, whatever they want to call it, it just definitely does seem to be petering out a little bit. And maybe it's a question mark over Klopp. Did he make the announcement a little bit too early, where everybody's kind of gone on holidays now? I think even the players, like you can see Salah, he's not been firing on all cylinders over the last number of weeks as well. So, yeah, I do think so. And I'm going to call that one a draw.
Okay. Now, James, I'm going to go straight to you. And if you wouldn't mind, James, firstly, I'd like your opinion, obviously, in the match. And secondly, if you wouldn't mind giving us a small bit of background on Mr. Slot. I think he's the final manager. I think he's been propped up or being propositioned as the next Liverpool manager. So, James, how do you think that fixture will go?
I think Liverpool will win. I think it'll be 3 points for Liverpool. As Russell rightly said, West Ham's season is in danger of petering out. I think for all the billions involved in the sport, for all the statistics people love to band around to try to gain that edge, they forget one thing, and that is you cannot plan a career. And that leads me into my next point regarding Arne Slot. 8 years ago, he's managing Cambuur Leeuwarden, and via AZ and Feyenoord has the opportunity to become Liverpool manager. You wouldn't have said that when he first took on his first managerial role at Cambuur Leeuwarden, and they was impressed with his intelligence. I mean, Bram van Polen, who played with him at Pek Zwolle, even said that before he retired as a player, he was already a manager on the pitch. And he did sterling work at AZ. And I think a lot of it's overshadowed because people forget that football was disbanded during the corona outbreak here. And he even managed to win with AZ Alkmaar against Napoli, which was a great result for a team of AZ standing. So it's a great opportunity for him. But I think one thing that he's got to be aware of is he's only got to look at his compatriot, Den Haag, in the fact of how he's being treated by the English media. And that must be a marker for Arne Slot, that they're not going to treat you with kid gloves. You need to be on it from the get-go, and it's going to be a really, really interesting appointment, and be very interesting to see what will happen.
Very good. Now, Terry, how do you think the Hammers are going to go against Liverpool?
I think the Hammers are spiralling away into oblivion currently. I think the team has given up the ghost, and I think Klopp's men, you know, obviously they had the bad result at Atlanta, and then again after that, but I don't know. I can't see Klopp's boys losing three matches in a row. So I favour Liverpool definitely to win it.
Thanks, Mel. Okay, lads, so the next fixture is a really interesting fixture. And Terry, I'm going to get you in on this while I have you on the line at the moment. It's Fulham versus Palace. Now, my geography of London is obviously very broad strokes rather than the minutiae of it. But Fulham and Crystal Palace, firstly, aren't that far away. Fulham themselves have this, was it Rodrigo Muniz, the Ake or Axe fan. How do you think that's going to go? And how much of a derby is Fulham and Crystal Palace?
Oh, they're too far away. I mean, okay. Fulham's derby would be with Chelsea and maybe QPR. Fulham, the biggest problem in London is, although places on the map don't look far away, it takes you hours to, well, serious hours to drive across London, or even on public transport. It's not quick. So Fulham is a West London club, and if people... when in the old days, when you could just rock up early to a ground and be sure of getting in, you have to have season tickets. A lot of the Arsenal fans, and I'm sure other teams did this, used to go down to the Thames. There's lots of piers down there. Get on one of these little pleasure boats, grab a few beers. If it was summer weather or late spring, late summer, they'd be, you know, they'd have their shirts off and singing away and drinking away, and then they'd stroll into Fulham. So it was always a nice fixture. And I don't know anybody who dislikes Fulham as Londoners. Maybe Chelsea do, as their close neighbours. But and Crystal Palace, that's a massive journey, a real massive journey. I used to do gigs down there, and you have to leave hours before, just you work your way through central London and so on. Just a little interesting thing about Palace for the Irish listeners, and we're all great Brady fans. Years ago, I turned up a Palace Arsenal match down at Crystal Palace, Selhurst Park, and Arsenal came out, and I don't think you'll read this anywhere else. For the first half, they played Liam Brady at centre forward. Now, he was our talisman, phenomenal player. He looked awful. You know, he didn't have the pace for it. He didn't have the physique for it. He didn't have the hype for it. And luckily, they brought him back into midfield. I can't remember why he didn't play in midfield. Maybe they didn't have a proper centre forward or something. So I like Palace. I like Fulham, actually. I mean, that Oliver Glasner, the Austrian guy at Palace, is doing a great job. They've got this Elise and Eze. I think Eze used to play for Arsenal Youth. And those guys are tearing it up over there at Palace. And, of course, the new broom sweeps clean. I think Glasner's certainly doing a good job. Marco Silva at Fulham, the results are up and down all the time. It's very strange. They beat us there before Christmas, but they've had some strange results. So, I mean, it would be too obvious to call it a draw. I think Palace are on their ascendancy, and I quite like Palace. So I'm going to go for a very narrow Palace win.
Thanks, Terry. Now, I think Terry's touched on something there with Palace and Glasner. How do you think that's going to work, Goras?
Yeah, like, I think Palace, funny enough, when we're talking about West Ham this season, Peter, now Palace is nearly the opposite. They've been absolutely flying over the last number of weeks. I think Mateta's been banging in the goals. I think that's been a massive thing for them. And he hadn't really, up to maybe the start of March, it hadn't really clicked for him at all. But since then, he's been in flying form. I think he's got like 7-8 goals since the beginning of March. And it's no coincidence that's kind of fallen in line in terms of Palace's results. Like, I think they walloped West Ham there last week. They bet Liverpool a number of weeks ago as well. So they're flying. It's just unfortunate that it came at a time where it's probably a little bit too late for them to do anything. Like, obviously going to finish in mid-table. I think I spoke on the podcast before about, I think it was when Palace, the last podcast, I think Palace were playing Forest. And at that stage, it was tight whether Palace would actually get pulled back into a relegation battle. I think between themselves and Forest, I thought whoever was going to win that match could actually end up getting pull back into the relegation fold, but it ended up being a draw. But since then, Palace have just kicked on massively. Even I think they were beaten 4-2 by Man City a couple of weeks ago as well, and that was the last time they were beaten, but they still managed to put up a good fight. An interesting thing actually about Palace, just when I was reading up about them, is that if you look at the amount of goals that they've scored over the season, I think, is it 45, 43 goals? But they've only got 10 goal scorers all season, where that's on par. I think Sheffield United have similar, but if you're looking at most of the teams, you're probably generally, for the amount of games that are played, you're probably looking at around 15, 16, 17 different goal scorers. It just shows that it's quite concentrated, and if they can get their first 11 playing and playing well together and clicking, then they actually have a really good team there. So Glasner's done a good job, I think.
I
just think Palace will actually win this night.
Now, James, you might be able to fill us in a bit on Glasner, because he's a man with a bit of pedigree, and obviously he has, you know, Eze, Olise, Mateta, then he has your man Anderson at the back, Wharton in midfield. This is good, as the makings of a real good Palace team if they're left together. How do you think he's going to work out for him, James?
Well, I think it's a good, solid start for him, you know, coming from the experience that he's had, you know, managing Frankfurt and Wolfsburg, and managing his native Austria as well. And, you know, it's not easy to rock up in the Premier League. And, you know, Crystal Palace, I think if they buy well over the summer, they can improve over time. They have become an established Premier League club the last decade. There's no doubt about that. As you say, with Joachim Andersen, you know, even with his experience at FC Twente, Olympic Lyon, and also Sampdoria, you know, his good, solid experience there. I think the game against Fulham is typical of a London derby, and that's why I predict it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Pretty good. Now, and that, thanks, James. Actually, I'm going to keep you on the line now for the next one, because I think it's like Ten Hag is on the way out. I think it's over. I think it's only a matter of he's going to keep that noble Man United tradition possibly alive of winning the FA Cup and getting sacked soon after. So, but Ten Hag, like, they've conceded, I think, the most shots of any team in the top five leagues in Europe. Their average shot concession is over 20 shots per match. Like, where did it all go wrong for Ten Hag, and how do you think they're going to get on against Burnley, James?
Well, I think where it went wrong is, upon taking the job, he must have been aware that the main pillars to the success of any Manchester United team is the youth. And he takes the decision in the early days of his tenure to get rid of James Garner, who's doing wonders for Everton and is on the brink of an English national team call-up. Also, as well, you see in the press conference, especially after the Coventry game, that he's not in a position to clearly say what he wants to say in English. And lots of people often say, obviously, they learn English from the age of five here in the Netherlands, but he's not from Eindhoven, he's not from Amsterdam, he's not from Rotterdam, so he's from the East. So he's not really fine-tuned in terms of city life and international pedigree. And I think as well, if he does get relieved of his duties, I think he's going to look back and think, could I have done things differently? I think as well, as I said in one of our previous points, it's a warning shot for Arne Slot, because the Premier League is slowly but surely becoming like an X factor, where it's now the flavour of the month manager gets linked with the big jobs. It's no longer about a manager thinking, is a club, is it a good fit for me? It's no longer about the club thinking, is the manager a good fit for us? And it's funny with Arne Slot, you know, I've been based in the Netherlands for almost two decades. And in the last 3 days, you've heard constant news about Slot, Feyenoord, but nobody's come on and said, well, what about his time at AZ Alkmaar? What about his time at Cambuur Leeuwarden? But again, it's maybe they're not interested in that kind of depth, I'm not sure. And then you've got people that played the game in England that, oh, I don't know much about him. Well, of course you don't know much about him, because 8 years ago he was managing Cambuur Leeuwarden. So it just goes to show. I think Manchester United will beat Burnley, but I think Ten Hag, if he does win the FA Cup and he does have a chance, then hopefully he will keep his job. But if he doesn't, he will most definitely think, how could I have done things differently? Because for all the billions in this game, you know, it's no secret that if you have the right people in the right place at the right time. Timing is so important in football. Yeah. Character is so important in football. And I've spoken to many managers who have also managed abroad. I remember interviewing William Flutes, who managed Ado Den Haag and Sparta Rotterdam. And he managed for a very, very short period in Greece, Nikos Volos. And he, I said to him, I said, what was that like? He said, James, he said, it wasn't nice. Mm-hmm. He said, I had a training session where I wanted to say what I wanted to say to my players. I wanted to instruct my players about what to do, and I couldn't do it because I can't speak Greek. And he said something which stuck with me through the years, where you can be the greatest manager on earth, but if you can't bring your message and get your message across to your players, you've got no chance. Mm. And I think in the current day, that is really forgotten by so many people. The same way that Guardiola is, the rhetoric is, everyone's got to play like us. Well, lower down the football pyramid, they don't have the will, nor the understanding, nor, the most important part, nor the obligation to play that way. The lower down the pyramid you go, they don't have prozone. They don't have all the ability for the statistics. And I think some clubs have been duped, and I say the word duped, into thinking we've got to play that way. Football's about different styles as well. And I'm absolutely certain, and I'd be happy to go on record. Obviously, we're recording, and I like to think that everything I say I can back up.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain that before the end of Guardiola's tenure, there will be one specific team or one specific opponent which will knock them into another orbit, yeah, and it will shell shock them. I'm not sure which team that will be. But I'm certain during the remainder of Guardiola's tenure, there'll be one specific opponent that will knock Manchester City into another orbit. Yeah. And then they'll be absolutely shell-shocked.
You know, just to bring it on there, Burnley obviously are very much in that school, Ross. They are a company. He is a disciple of Klopp. Of Guardiola. But is he going to stay up? Are Burnley going to survive?
Yeah, they've given themselves a chance over the last couple of weeks. Like, I think we probably all written them off there about a month ago. Like, but they've pulled together a couple of really decent results. I think even if you look at their last match, funny enough, we're playing Man United now. Both teams' last match was against Sheffield United. United, even though they won 4-2, I think they actually struggled to get the victory there. Whereas Burnley pretty much put Sheffield United to the sword. I think the two teams, yeah, it's going to be an interesting match. Anyway, I actually think Burnley are going to beat them. I'm going to take a hard line here against all the United fans now that are listening. That could be the final nail in Ten Hag's his coffin.
And Terry, how do you think United and Burnley's going to go?
Well, at first view of it, I thought, well, Burnley haven't done well all season. They've tried to play decent football. As you say, they're kind of under the pupillage of Guardiola, that style of football. There's a thing in the EPL saying if you first come up, you've got to shore up that defence. And you can't do that unless you've got some really good players. But as Ross was saying, they've had a few good results. I would love them to pull off a shock up at Old Trafford. But I can't see it. I mean, for goodness sake, if Erik ten Hag can't put together a half-decent team to squeeze a 1-0 against Burnley, then he's gone.
Yeah. Actually, just one thing as well, I suppose, over the last number of weeks, James, you kind of bigged him up a good bit as well over the last little while, the last few podcasts, Josh Cullen. I don't think it's any coincidence that since he's come back into the team and he's been playing 90 minutes over the last 5, 6, 7 matches for Burnley, that the results have actually improved.
And actually, just before we move on from this, Burnley have, Joe, they're very pacey, but what's called your man, Dara O'Shea, the Irish, is Town's the fastest defender one of the top two or something defenders in the Premier League. But in typical Irish fashion, when it was mentioned to Damien Delaney, and I think it was one of the sports channels, in the Irish difficulty of accepting a compliment, Damien Delaney pointed out that actually Turf Moor has a slant in it, so that's the reason. Okay, lads. So we'll move on. Actually, another fixture here, and we have to discuss this. Everton versus Brentford. Now, will there have to be a dress code brought in the Premier League? Will those that wear tracksuits in derbies, will they have to just stay away from the sideline? Has Sean Dyche rewritten how to dress for a football match? Ross?
Yeah, absolutely. But then you look back, Martin O'Neill was a similar thing as well, going back in the days when he used to manage Leicester, wasn't he? He'd be dancing up and down the sideline in his tracksuit, but... Yeah, like, okay, Everton, again, they've kind of done fairly well over the last number. They bet Liverpool the other night. Like, they pulled themselves out of the mire, really, over the last number of weeks. And I think the one thing, I don't think it's a coincidence as well, that they've really dug in. And I think, I actually think Forest are going to win here. I think Brentford, even Brentford, like we see, Ivan Toney and Collins, they're arguing on the field there a number of weeks ago too. So yeah, like, I think they're kind of, again, they're not playing for too much either. Everton were playing for their lives, and I think they're probably pretty much safe now at this stage.
Yeah, and very much so. And James, I come on to you on this. Brentford, like, Thomas Frank, you know, he's Danish. He's a very good manager. He's kind of forgotten in the Premier. All these appointments, like, people can't get rid of or can't move Roberto De Zerbi on quick enough, but what he's done at Brentford is very impressive, and this could be a very tight match. How do you think Everton and Brentford's going to go, James?
I think with home advantage, I think Everton will win. I think it'll be a 2-1 draw. Thomas Frank has done a very good job. Yeah. You know, so people forget as well, he also managed at international level with the different age categories of Denmark, and also managed Bromby as well, which is one of the biggest clubs in the country. And it'll be interesting to see how he goes forward. And then I said on a couple of previous podcasts ago that I think there'll be so many managerial changes in the summer. I think it'll be quite overwhelming for a lot of the media, you know, and the speculation involved as well. That, you know, people have to remember that this is a profession, this is a livelihood. This isn't an audition of the X Factor. But I think it's become so fraught with attention now that people just, they love to pick, it's like a tombola. They pick a manager and then they pick his club and they put the two together and they say, oh, he's linked with him, or he's linked with that club, or they're linked with him. And it's quite strange, really.
Yeah. And just while we're on, Everton are obviously, Terry, you have a fondness for Everton. How do you think Everton are going to go on against Brentford?
Yeah, I've got a good friend I met in Spain a few years ago, and we correspond all the time on WhatsApp and Facebook and stuff. So I'm delighted with the fact that Everton have turned this round, and Sean Dyche has turned it round. So, and he was asked the other day, Do managers still meet after the games? And he said when Arsene Wenger and Arsenal played, he invited Arsene Wenger up to his manager's office. And Arsene Wenger was always fond of a tipple of high-quality red wine. And he suddenly realised he had, like, the equivalent of, I don't want it to be in Ireland, but like Sainsbury's, the cheapest wine you can find. But it's dour football at times, but at least Sean Dyche has done the famous thing, get that back four sorted out. That Branthwaite is looking a very good player, left-footed, 6'5", young guy, scored in the last match. You know, I'm delighted for them. But then I love the stuff Thomas Frank has done. And he's taken over a club that were very rarely in the sort of top division in England. So I'd like to see, I might have to let my heart rule my head here. I'd like to see Everton win this one.
Okay. Now, Wolves and Luton is on actually earlier tomorrow. And it's just, that is obviously a big fixture for Luton. Wolves, maybe not so much. Wolves seem to, I put it this way, they're mid-table, 12th, I think, overall. So how do you think Wolves and Luton is going to go, Ross?
Yeah, look, I think, again, Luton really need to start winning some matches again. They've got a couple of batterings over the last number of weeks too. We were looking a couple of weeks ago, they're a really exciting team to watch, and then they give it a go, they really do. Like, they're going out every match and gung-ho, but yeah, they're just too open at the back and they're getting found out now. I think they need to get a result this weekend, otherwise they're in big trouble. And look, I think everybody has a bit of a fondness for Luton. I think they liked what they've done since they've come up, like that gung-ho approach. I'm going to go for a Luton win, but to be quite honest, it'll probably end up being a draw. Wolves themselves, haven't been great either over the last number of weeks. So again, their season's kind of petered out as well. So I'll go for a Luton win.
Yeah. And how do you think it, James? Obviously there's been a lot of interest here with Ogbeni playing for Luton, and your man Doughty on the other wing is very good too. But that's all promise. But I think we've got the stage of the year now that, James, they have to convert it into results. How do you think Luton and Wolves is going to go?
I agree with Ross. I think Luton will win. I think Alfie Doherty has been absolutely brilliant. I believe they signed him from Stoke, and he's a really, really good player. And also been impressed with obviously Ross Barkley and Andros Townsend. And I think it would be a great story if they were to stay up. And I think it's definitely going to be two from three. And I think they've equipped themselves really well. You know, this is, they had to spend a lot of money on stadium renovations to even get ready to be able to play Premier League football. You know, it was their, first time in the Premier League, if you like. And, I think they've done really, really well. And for a league that literally wants to make itself a closed shop as time goes on, it needs stories like Luton. I mean, it's likely that Leeds and Leicester, I mean, it's entirely feasible that the three teams that went down last season could return. Yeah. So it would be good for Luton if they stay in the division, because for all the money involved in the Premier League, it also needs to respect the pyramid. You can't cut it off now. You can't just have 20 teams and that's that. You know, and one thing I am quite worried about, which I don't think is getting as much attention as what it should be. Obviously, Leeds have American owners and also Ipswich have American stakeholders. One of the things I am worried about is that as time goes on with more and more American owners, that they will push and they will push and they will push to try and eradicate promotion relegation. And if that happens, I hope that fans go on the streets like they did with the Super League. Because what are you trying to do? Are you trying to say that there's no social mobility within football? If that's the case for the clubs, then surely that should also be the case for the players.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really delicate situation, and it's something I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah. And just moving on from that now, the other, Burnley with Sheffield United, Luton, and obviously Forest are the other. So Forest are playing City this weekend. Terry, how do you think Forest and City is going to go?
Oh, I think that there's only one winner there, I'm afraid. Forest are smarting at some dodgy refereeing decisions, and it's never good when you've got those grudges going on in your head. I hate to say it, being an Arsenal fan, but Man City look like they're on a roll, and people need to know that they've basically got two first teams, and so the kind of physical fatigue, mental fatigue isn't as biting and deep into teams they put out. Whereas Liverpool are suffering from fatigue, Arsenal are, so I don't think there's much chance. I would love to see Man City lose. And you that's the joy of football. You always live in hope. So, I'm not going to tip City, although I think they'll probably win it. But I'll go for what would suit Arsenal, and that is a draw.
Very good. Now, before we go on, just make one point here. Notts Forest acted, I think, very inappropriately to a decision that went against them with these social media tweets and this outputs of the last couple of weeks. There's Man City have 115 charges hanging over them. I remember a time when Serie A was the elitist league in the world, and it was untouchable from all the other leagues, and it was next thing, things like this brought it down, corruption. Is Man City and Forest and their type of behaviour going to be undermine the Premier League? Ross, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think even Forest themselves already have been deducted points for going against the financial fair play. So even last week, it was terrible. It was absolutely ridiculous. And in my own opinion, I'd actually happily see them go down now for that, because you can't be calling out the integrity of referees. Ultimately, you're playing a sport. You have a referee there. And what's kind of comical about it is the fact they were playing Everton and the referee was a Luton, or what one of the VARs was obviously a Luton supporter. But I think ultimately that the better result for them there would have been a draw. So for Forest, like, they would have preferred a draw, so they'd actually have two targets to shoot at rather than one, but one of the teams winning. So ultimately, it's kind of a moot point in them coming out like that. It's kind of silly. But yeah, like, it definitely does, and you're right, like, over the last kind of, it was kind of the late 90s, early 2000 period where Serie A was just starting to falter, and it was these type of things were coming out. Like, obviously, Juventus were, they were relegated. I think Fiorentina were another one, Parma potentially another one as well. There's three teams there that there was a lot of irregularities with. And yeah, like, it depending on how hard line the Premier League want to be in it, and the issue is maybe they don't want to be because they have a particular product to sell, and there's so much money behind it now that they can't let it fault. But yeah, it's a very fair point and one I would tend to agree with. But yeah, and just from a result point of view, let's call a Forest win as much as I... from an Arsenal perspective, we definitely want it to happen. But,
just before we went to Europe, James, and I might just get your thoughts on that same point. Like, is Forest behaviour, is overly aggressive, this media mogul from Greece, Man City with their 115 charge, are these undermining the Premier League and the integrity of the competition?
I think it can be summed up with one word, and that one word is desperation. There was no need for Nottingham Forest when they got promoted to go on and sign 27 players. There was absolutely no need for it. And a surprising, good footballers like Ryan Yates, Sam Surridge, Remo Freuler, who are good footballers that could have given Nottingham Forest an even more stable base to survive in the Premier League, although they did survive, but they could have improved a lot more. I think it's complete desperation. And, you know, you both make some great points regarding the Italian League, but that also was the richest and had the most money. And the common denominator is the money involved in the English game as well. You know, there's rumours here in the Netherlands that Liverpool are about to pay €15 million to secure the services of Arne Slot. And there's, in the area of Liverpool and in the area of the north of England, there are more and more normal working people having to use food banks. And I have always said that in a first world country, one food bank is one too many. But it just goes to show how out of touch football is becoming, where a manager going to that area of the country where people are struggling in the north, towards the north, and yet the local club of that where he's going to of that area would have paid €15 million for his services. It's a little bit skewed, I think.
Yeah. Now, thanks, James, and we'll get back to you again in a minute because we're going to have a quick chat about European football. But before we'll go straight into it now. But there's only one English Premier League team left in Europe. That's Aston Villa actually taking on Olympiacos, the same owner as Owens Nottingham Forest. How do you think Aston Villa and Olympiacos is going to work out, Terry?
Well, I'm an Unai Emery fan, and I would love to see him get through. What he does in Europe is he keeps a very tight defence, and he squeezes through by the odd goal or even a penalty shootout. So unless he's distracted by the league, which I doubt if he would be, and he's got such a wonderful... Is it how many pro trophies has he won? Five trophies in European competitions. So I can see Aston Villa coming through. He's really got those boys fired up. He's got a heck of an engine in midfield. And, come on. I'm sorry to bring this point up, but there was a terrible time when he took over Arsenal. And because he said, no, I'm going to interview in English, although he obviously can speak Basque and Catalan and, Castilian, and he's pretty good at Portuguese and French and Italian. And he tried to do interviews in English. And yes, he got his pronunciation wrong. And the pylon that was going on because he couldn't say good evening properly. Properly, I can't say it either. And I felt for him, you know. And then in the end, we're the only team that he took through to Arsenal, the only team he took through to a European final, which didn't lift the cup. So, yep, come on, Unai, I respect you. You're a top manager. Go on and lift that cup.
Very good. Now, James, I'm going to bring you back in here. Obviously, you might be able to tell us a bit about you were at the Bayern-Arsenal match, a great in the Allianz Arena. So you might even describe the evening. And who do you think is going to win between Bayern and Real Madrid?
Well, it was an amazing experience. If you'd have said to me when I was a little boy that you get to experience Bayern Munich away against Arsenal away to Bayern Munich and then you return home to Amsterdam of all places, I would have said, what world do you come from? Because you don't come from this one. But it just goes to show you never know what's around the corner in life. And the professionalism of the club really struck me. I mean, I was aware of the size of the club. I was aware of the history of the club. But I went on a tour of the museum. And they had like a small meeting room table where, you know, it would be the nerve centre, where the brains, the likes of Beckenbauer, Rummenigge, Hoeneß would sit to discuss about keeping the club healthy. And you walk around the stadium and it's 75,000 people. And Bayern deserved their win. They really did. And they're a real team. And I watched, I felt like a proud father in terms of Matthijs de Ligt because I saw him play and break through for Ajax as a 17-year-old. And now I'm watching him play for Bayern Munich. And I was just delighted for him. And what really struck me was the cohesion of the team and also Manuel Neuer. You know, he's a modern-day Sepp Maier. I don't think people will understand just how good he is until he retires. And I think that, you know, you watch him, he's the boss of his own 18-yard box. And if somebody comes into his 18-yard box, who's in control? Not the defenders, he is. Because he knows where to stand and how to reduce goal opportunities, and absolutely amazing. And I think they'll beat Real Madrid over two legs. And bear in mind that they've knocked out Real Madrid 5 times in European competition in their history. So it's not something which is going to be a shock. Although when you speak to people, they think it will be. Yeah. It won't. I think they'll go on to face Paris Saint-Germain in the final. I think they'll win it for a 7th time. Which will take them level with AC Milan, and just a tremendous club, you know. And if you think of what you've got to aspire to, and how you've got to get things right, how you've got to arrange things behind the scenes, and I just think they're a model club, and I tip my hat and wish them all the best for the remainder of the Champions League.
Now, Russ, Bayern beat Arsenal. Is that going to be the cornerstone of Mikel Arteta's success? Did he learn enough that night to win the championship?
Yeah, let's hope so. I think they kind of Arsenal had faltered. I think with the Villa match, and then obviously went to Bayern. And I was worried after that match because they did look leggy, specifically in the second half of the Villa match. Like in the second half against Bayern, like they really did just look tired, and it looked like their season again was kind of faltering. But yeah, they've come back very, very well. I don't know, whatever Arteta's done or said at the end of that match, like, has really galvanised them a little bit, and they seem to be kind of kicking on now. Yeah, like, I think Bayern, I think James kind of put it very, very well. I think if you were listening to the narrative before the match, there's a lot of people talking about Bayern and a media narrative kind of putting out there that Bayern, this is not a good Bayern side at all. From what I see them over the two matches against Arsenal, this is a very good Bayern side. I think they've just come up with against an exceptionally good Bayer Leverkusen side this particular 1 year. It'll be interesting to see if Leverkusen can keep that going next year. But as it stands, Bayern, I do think Bayern will beat Madrid over the two legs as well.
Yeah. And actually, while we discuss that, and Terry, I'm going to bring you in here because you have a strong opinion on this. Man City were beaten by Real Madrid. Bayern beat Arsenal. These are highly structured teams. Pep Guardiola, Mikel Arteta, they go out and they tell you what to do and you do it. There's no questions asked. While Jude Bellingham made the remark that Ancelotti was yawning before they left the dressing room. He was yawning and he told his players, go out and excite me. Is that what put Bayern and Real Madrid into the semi-final, Terry?
It's very possible. I mean, I do like Bayern Munich and cracking team. They deserve to go through against Arsenal. They really sucker punched Arsenal in the first leg. We went 1-0 up and we went gung-ho. which is we use this Arteta Guardiola system of pressing really high, centre backs around the halfway line, and Bayern knew that. And they knew that they'd get a ball over the top for people to run onto. So, I'd love to see Bayern do it because Real Madrid win it so many times. And I think it's Bayern's turn this time.
Yeah, very good. And before we move, James, I might just get you in one more time. Roma are playing Leverkusen in the other, and obviously Leverkusen, everything that like Alonso touches turns to gold at the moment. Will Leverkusen go on and do a European and domestic double?
No, I don't think so. I don't. I think that there's a nasty surprise waiting around the corner for them. Whether that be in European competition or whether that be in the cup final against Kaiserslautern, who are also at risk of being relegated to the German third division. So it just goes to show that you never know what's around the corner. Roma have very much improved under Daniel De Rossi. And, although he's extremely inexperienced as a manager, that's his club, that's his city, that's his soul, if you like. And, you know, Roma knocked out Bayer Leverkusen last time. And I can see it happening again. And just quickly touching on Aston Villa, I agree with Terry. I do think they'll make it through to the final. I think they'll go on to win the competition. But they won't have it all their own way against a decent Olympiacos side, who will also have the carrot of playing the final in Athens in the stadium of AEK. So I think it will be a draw at Villa Park. And I think Villa will win by hook or by crook in Athens. And I think they'll go on to win their first European silverware since 1983, when they beat Barcelona in the Super Cup.
Very good. Now, lads, I suppose we've given Europe a good update. There's only one fixture left to discuss. I think a fixture very close to this podcast's heart is even our intro music even makes reference to the Irish in North London. But so it's Arsenal and Spurs. It's the chance, I suppose, for Arsenal. They're playing before City. It's the chance to put real pressure on and actually maybe even create a bigger gap. But before we go into that, I think we're going to touch on a couple of key players. Firstly, I'd like to mention the name Joe Kinnear. Joe Kinnear has passed away since we were had our last podcast. Joe Kinnear was a kind of a very affectionate, liked character in Irish football. He obviously predicted famously in 1994 when Ireland were playing Italy that the Irish midfield of Keane, Houghton, Townsend, and John Sheridan would dominate the Italians and ultimately we would win. And that's what happened. Joe Kinnear, have you any memories of Joe Kinnear, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, he was in one of the, you know, one of the half decent Spurs teams over the years. They've always had a few players coming through that have Irish links. Was Chris Hughton there? Right. And of course, long before that, you had the Northern Ireland guy, Danny Blanchflower, when they won the double in 60-61. They had Jerry Armstrong playing for them as well. So sort of London clubs always have a smattering of, or used to have, a smattering of Irish lads doing well for them. And I've got, he was a clean player, a good player, not dirty. And even though he wore the wrong jersey, I'd like to wish him that he may rest in peace now.
Thanks, Alan, Terry. Now, and the other player, before we get in, I'm going to get the lads' maybe favourite North London derby now in a minute, but the other player that's obviously very current and very much alive and is being compared to people like Andrew Perlow and all that is Martin Odegaard. Is Martin Odegaard the greatest midfielder possibly playing in Europe at the moment, Ross?
It's a tough call. Yeah, like he is doing phenomenal stuff. I think if you look at him, his movement is just amazing. How he controls the ball, how he creates space from absolutely nothing. Like, it's funny, when he receives the ball on the edge of the 18-yard box, teams must know exactly what he's going to do. He's just cutting the ball back into Saka running in behind. But it just seems to stick every single time. It's amazing like that they can actually get away with it over and over and over again. Yeah, he's just a magician. And my only gripe with him is sometimes he gets himself into a reasonably decent position to shoot, but he'll still look for the pass. And that's the one thing I think he could really add to his game, where if he has a chance, just have to pop a goal and see what happens instead of just always trying to lay it off. And I know maybe that's, again, these guys are coached to within an inch of their lives in terms of you get the ball, this is what you do A, B and C, and that's pretty much it. But yeah, a little bit more of an invention could go a long way for him now.
Yeah. And James, I'm going to get you to say, like, Martin Odegaard, someone said that he's top of assists and whatever and passes into the box and all, and they say, oh, Bruno Fernandes is pretty much the same, but has Odegaard got that real leadership? He is a hard working player, he doesn't roar and shout, he leads by example. Is he really the embodiment of a really good championship winning team?
Well, I think people forget how young he was when he started. I mean, I remember interviewing Lucas Baker, who played with him when he came on loan here in the Netherlands to Heerenveen. And he was saying that he was so young, he was about 17 years of age. And he said the speed of his footwork just surprised everybody at training. His first training at Heerenveen, it was just, who is this kid? The speed of his footwork even then. And I think he's done really, really well. You know, it must be difficult to be marginalised at a club like Real Madrid. I mean, if you think of Odegaard's journey at Real Madrid and you look at Bellingham's, it's night and day. So I think he's done really, really well to come back from that, because there's not many players. I can only think of one in Arjen Robben. When you leave Real Madrid, it's very rare that you go on to have a wonderful, successful career. Normally you go downwards. So I think he's done really, really well. But I think it's going to be a massive game for Arsenal. I think that, I can't see Arsenal winning at Spurs for the second season in a row. I just can't see that happening, especially when you haven't won there in the 8 seasons previous. I think it will be a draw, and it'll be really, really interesting. Obviously, North London derbies are special games. You know, people also have to be aware that we hail from South London, and we moved from South London to North London in 1913, which many people seem to forget. That's why I always struggle to say the words North London forever, when that's quite clearly not the case. But obviously some people have very short memories, don't they?
Yeah. Actually, just before we move on, this North London derby, and actually I think I asked everyone maybe, and I think I'll go to you, Ross, first. Can you, let's say, if you were to pick a North London derby, maybe your favourite one, what would that be?
Yeah, so if I go back a number, this is actually a few different strands to this now from a number of years ago. So if I go back to, it was at the Emirates in 2012, the date was the 17th of November. And the reason it's so fresh in my mind is because my son, his birthday is on the 16th of November. He was born in 2011, so my wife had actually organised the birthday party for the 17th of November 2012. And I broke to her about 2 weeks beforehand that I'm after getting tickets to the North London Derby, and any chance we can move the party out a couple of weeks. So yeah, she was fine. Anyway, I'm lucky to have such a supportive spouse that she said, yeah, no problem at all, you go over to the match, have a great time, whatever. And yeah, I look after your son on his birthday. But anyway, so I went over to the match. As I tend to do, I go over there, like, and it was phenomenal. The atmosphere is amazing. So it was kind of the match where Adebayor was playing for Spurs. Adebayor is a certain bit of infamy in terms of Arsenal fans, obviously, from this is post his celebration against Arsenal when he scored for Man City and ran the length of the field to score in front of the Arsenal fans at the Etihad. So Adebayor obviously was a pantomime villainer. So he scored after 10 minutes, I think. So put Spurs 1-0 up. And one thing that actually, it always sticks in my mind, he was getting the absolute dog's abuse all day. And you could see the pressure was getting to him. And when he scored the goal, for a split second, I remember looking at him going, he's actually going to run across to the Arsenal fans, or run in front of the Arsenal fans and celebrate in front of them again. And he kind of stopped, and you could kind of see for a split second, he stopped, second-guessed himself, and kind of turned towards the Spurs fans. But then I think about 5 minutes later, if not a couple more minutes after that, he did a two-tackle, two-footed lunge on Santi Cazorla, got sent off. That was the biggest cheer of the day. I think because Arsenal, like, it was an amazing match, as it turns out. It ended up being 5-2 to Arsenal. Obviously, Spurs going the man down that early in the match, like, didn't help. But yeah, Adebayor, he definitely got a serious abuse that day. But just to top it off, I think that usually when I go over to matches, like, I'll go into, I think there's William Hill just there beside Finsbury Park. So it's on the way to the stadium. And I generally have like a tenner. I'll just pick a bet and just to the match. I'm not one for bets at all, but usually when I go to a match, I'll have one or two. So that day, I bet on Theo Walcott to score anytime and Arsenal to win, Arsenal minus two. So in the end, Arsenal won by 3 goals. Theo Walcott got a goal in the 91st minute for Arsenal to go 5-2 and for me to win my bet. So that pretty much covered my trip over to North London for that North London derby. So
very good. Now, Terry, you obviously, I think, now James, I suppose, equally, but you have, let's say, quite a back catalogue of North London derbies. If you had to pick a favourite North London derby, Terry, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I've been to so many. You know, and I've been kicked by a police horse or police officer on a horse outside White Hart Lane purely by accident. But it was never a happy place to go to. And I've grew up with lots of Spurs fans. And to be honest, now that the dust has settled on the previous careers, you find out that a lot of the lads lived in quite a posh area called Totteridge, where Arsene Wenger lived. And there's a big pub called the Orange Tree there. And apparently the players of Tottenham and Arsenal used to congregate in there and have meals and drinks and so on. So to a certain extent, it's sort of fabrication, really, this big rivalry. In fact, Herbert Chapman, I think our famous manager in the 30s, he actually was ended his career as a fullback playing for Spurs and ended up Arsenal's probably most famous manager. So I can't pick one, lads. I've been to so many. I'll tell you, when the first match I went to it when I was a kid, and I went with a schoolmate, and he kept saying to me, "Oh, you live in Highbury, you're an Arsenal fan." And I said, no, I don't mind who wins. And he kept on at me, a real Spurs fan, you know. So I said to him, "Steve, all right then, I'll tell you what, I'll support the team that wins today." And Arsenal won 4-0. And that was the start of some cracking matches, both at White Hart Lane and Arsenal. So do you know what? That match, I suppose, because it's such a long time ago, it was George Graham's wedding day and Terry Venables was his best man, Spurs guy. And George Graham scored. Terry Neal, the Northern Ireland guy, scored. But, you know, I've just been to so many. Now that I've been watching the game for so many years, I'm a little bit more, I'm not as partisan. I just want to see a good game of football. And hopefully the team in red and white wins. But, you know, you have to enjoy your football. You know, you can't leave your whole life. And when I was a young lad, and young listeners will kind of know this, your whole life is on beating Tottenham. Oh, actually, there is one game I went to, which was the one, I think it was May 1971, and we had to either draw 0-0 or win to do the first half of the famous double. And my dad and I queued up from 10 to 4 to 10 past 7. And there was people going out because they had claustrophobia. We were jammed up against a brick wall. I was young, so I didn't care. But there were people very frightened by it. And somehow dad and I got in. And we ended up in two seats, which we'd never been in before. So it was amazing and it was so stressful, but you know, that's part of football. And I was thinking this game coming up, you know, I'd be telling the Arsenal players, you know, don't get too excited. And as James said, a draw is fine. A draw. Listen, if Man City are going to win the whole thing by winning every game, fine. But I would be aiming for a draw. And then if you can sneak a win, fine.
Very good. James, just before we get to everyone's final score for the match, what was your favourite North London derby?
Well, I echo sentiments of Terry with the memories for the years. I'm going to pick a 4-2 win at the Emirates under Unai Emery, because that day had everything you could wish for in a North London derby. Arsenal won 4-2, 2-1 down at half time, and I remember the atmosphere in the North Bank when the whistle blew for the start of the second half, you know, the trepidation and the apprehension of, are we going to turn this around? And we did. you know, I remember Eric Geyer scoring and then trying to shush the North Bank, you know, and getting abused for that. And it's a very, very special game. It is. It's a game that means a lot to so many people. And so I'm going to pick the December 2018, where we beat Tottenham 4-2, and it was a London derby that had absolutely everything.
Okay, and I'll just contribute one as well. I'm going to go for a Tottenham win, actually, is my favourite Northern Derby. They went on and they won a League Cup. It was in 2008, and Robbie Keane scored, but they bet 5-1 on the night. It was a January fixture, and they went on and won a cup and bet a good Chelsea team in the final. So, in fairness to them, Tottenham haven't always lost the Northern Derby. They've won the other one. So, lads, we'll just finish on one thing and one thing only. We're tidying up our latest edition of From Fever Pitch to Hurler on the Ditch on Scariff Bay Community Radio. Your final scores for the North London Derby. Ross?
Yeah, I'm going to go balls out here now and say Arsenal -2 again, so I'll go 3-0 Arsenal.
3-0 Arsenal. Terry?
I'm going to say 2-0 Arsenal.
2-0 Arsenal. And James?
1-1.
1-1. Lads, as always, it was a pleasure. Thanks for giving your time and your knowledge. It was really entertaining. I hope everyone enjoys the matches over the weekend, and particularly the North London Derby, often described as the greatest derby of all the English derbies in top right football. So listen to enjoy the matches, and thanks for your contributions. And you'll be listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and the latest edition of From Fever Pitch to Hurler on the Dicks. Thanks, lads. Bye bye. Bye. And just before we finish, I'd like to thank one of our regular listeners, Alan Lynch, who's gone to Germany, running a marathon in Hamburg, I think, tomorrow. So best of luck, Alan, and I'm sure you'll perform admirably. Well done, and it's a great achievement. Bye. Thank you, Alan. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, the crack was good in Picklewood, and I wouldn't leave the crown. But Das is flying and Biddy's crying. Sure, Paddy was going to town.